from the computer-generated transcripts of crow calls, this is Here Be Monsters. March 11th. It's about 10 p.m. I've got in front of me here, I've got my most treasured possession from about the year 1993. It's actually quite possibly the oldest possession of mine that I currently have. I've taken it with me now on probably close to a dozen moves. I've taken this with me. It's like the one thing. It's a book. It's about 300, maybe 400 pages long. It's a hardcover. It's called the Kingfisher Illustrated Encyclopedia of Animals. It's still got the original dust jacket on it, and it's honestly, for being with me this long, it's in amazingly good shape. Let's read an animal fact here. Let's just flip through. Page 233, the paradoxical frog. The paradoxical frog is found in tropical South America and spends most of its life in the water. An extraordinary feature of this frog is that the tadpole is several times larger than the adult, being up to 11 inches long and decreasing with size as it matures. The froglets measure only 1.6 inches, and at first, scientists could not believe that the froglets and the tadpoles both belong to the same species. The adult frogs are usually only about 3 inches long. I could tell you how much this book meant to me, but I think it's fairly well illustrated by the fact that I was so worried I would lose it that I had my mom write my name and phone number in the front cover. And at some later date, I decided that wasn't enough security because I stuck a holographic nameplate in the front cover as well. It says property of, and then in my best like kid handwriting, I wrote Jeff Entman. It's a hologram of a koala bear sitting in a tree. And I remember that I thought this was a big deal. And so I did my best job writing my name by hand there. One of my earliest memories of being pretty upset was one day when I was reading this outside and I wanted to go play somewhere. And so I left this and it was underneath a tree at my old house. And there were like bugs in the tree. And they like dripped bug sap juice, whatever that is, down onto the dust jacket. And when I came back, I saw it and I thought I had ruined the book and I was really upset. Eventually though, that like sticky sap stuff, it like hardened up. And I was able to like scrape most of that off with my fingertips. And I'm just looking at the cover now and I can see some like little black dots here and there, but honestly, I don't think you would ever know that I'd left this under a tree because I very painstakingly picked it all off. One thing I remember liking about this book when I was a kid was that like, it is very much a book that felt like grown up to me. I think that's part of why I took such good care of it. Ice fish. These pale fish inhabit freezing cold seas. There are about 18 species, the largest being about 12 inches long and 4.4 pounds in weight. Ice fish are pale because their blood lacks the red pigment hemoglobin, used in other animals to carry sufficient oxygen. Ice fish have gaping beaked mouths and goggle eyes. What are goggle eyes? They feed on other fish and the shrimp-like krill, which are plentiful in Antarctic waters. I think about my generation, you know, I'm a millennial, like my generation's association with cynicism and irony. I think that there's been plenty of people who have like discussed like reasons for that, right? It's something I certainly fall prey to all the time. And so like one exercise I try to give myself is I try to say like, what are the things in this world that I can 100% say that I just like? No layers of irony, no shades of cynicism, none of that. And at the end of the day, I just like animals. I just really do. And it's very shallow. It's very unconceptual. I have a lot of questions about whether or not this book impacted the decisions I've made 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years after it was given to me. It was a large part of my childhood, though, this book. Ooh. Hydra. Hydra are small freshwater animals related to jellyfish and sea anemones. They have thin cylindrical bodies and several tentacles, usually 5 or 6, but sometimes as many as 12. On the other end of the body is a sticky disc, which the hydra uses to anchor itself to solid surfaces.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
the burblings and the poppings.
The podcast about the unknown.
The sponsor for this episode is Chazco of Brooklyn, New York. Chazco takes care of cats and dogs like this one. This is Kane. And Kane sometimes has trouble around new people, so he gets his walks from Chazco.
Hi, Kane. Hi. What are you doing?
Chazco welcomes pets with special behavioral and medical needs. Pets that some other services might turn away.
Okay, let's go.
So, if you live in Prospect Lefferts Gardens, Bed-Stuy, or the surrounding neighborhoods, Chazco would love to come walk your dog, or visit your cat, or provide custom care arrangements for your companion animal. Visit chazco.nyc to book an appointment. That's chazco.nyc. You can find that link in this episode show notes. Thank you, Chazco, for sponsoring Here Be Monsters.
I had driven across the country, you know, I don't know, a couple times before I moved to sagebrush country. And to be honest, I think a lot of us, myself included, take sagebrush for granted. And sagebrush as a plant is incredible. It's so hardy and smells like nothing else I've ever smelled in my whole life. And I struggle for the words to even describe that smell, but anybody who's, you know, broken off a piece of sagebrush as they're walking through the desert knows exactly that smell. This is the sound of the greater sage grouse on a lek, which is the word for their mating sites in the sagebrush of the Red Desert in Wyoming. You wouldn't know a lek if you were just walking through the sagebrush. You wouldn't be able to tell that the birds are actively participating in their mating behavior here. But what it looks like is this kind of open clearing or sort of like grassy meadow surrounded by sagebrush. And the birds gather around the edges. And then as the sun rises and before dawn in the early, early parts of the day, the males will do these ornate displays where they fluff up or puff up these air sacs in their chests. And these air sacs are white and they stand out against their darker feathers around them. And the males will quickly rush their wings down the sides of these air sacs. And it makes this swishing sound that if you listen really closely, you can hear it right alongside the sounds of the burblings and the poppings of their calls. I've been recording nature for my entire career as a radio journalist, and this, Jeff, was the most powerful recording experience I've ever had. My microphone was like inches away from these birds as they were doing this, completely ignoring me. And I have never been so close to such an alien, but so deeply wild and Western American sound in my whole life. The hairs stood up on my neck and there were tears in my eyes throughout the recording. Thank you.
This is the sound of a monkey crying for its mother on the banks of the Amazon River. So I'd taken a boat 15 hours into the Amazon with some surfers who wanted to ride the pororoca, the monster wave that comes every year and disturbs the land and picks up alligators on the way. I mean, it sounded this very mythical thing. So we went into the Amazon on this boat, and we got off into the dock, and we're walking around, and we heard the sound. It was just coming from this, the tiniest monkey you could ever think. And it was just lying there in this bed of hammock string. They said that the monkey's mother was missing, and it was waiting for her, or looking for her. And that was why it was crying, and they said that they were just giving the monkey some milk in the meantime. I mean, they do say that with humans, human babies have a specially like horrific cry in order to like get the attention of their parents. And I wonder if there was something here, but it was crying for a good while and didn't see anyone coming, any of its species coming to save it.
Rats and mice make vocalizations above our hearing range, far above our hearing range, from 20 to 100 kilohertz. And so for a researcher to listen to these calls, we have to slow them down to about 1/20th real speed. This is the sound a rat makes when they're happy. The way that like these rodent sounds, that you experience them when they're slowed down, it's very obvious that the, particularly the positive affective calls and the negative calls, you can just tell hearing them. The positive calls sound like these trill whistles like a bird call, like they're having fun or playing, or people have called it like laughter. And the distress calls are very much, you know, one frequency. You know, they kind of sound like an extended long whine. This is a sound a rat makes when they're anxious. When I started researching it, we did everything by hand. You would go through these hours-long files, slowed down at 1/20th speed, and find each individual call by hand. And that's just not tenable for large-scale experiments. And so we needed a method, some method, to do this faster and more accurately. My boss had this moment where he was like, you know, can't you just get a computer to do it? And I'm saying, you know, like, I do it by eye. It's really hard to get a computer to do it. And my tech at the time, a really talented young person named Russell Marks, just kind of like the idea must have popped into their head, and they went home and piloted out this use of machine vision for detecting the calls, and came back in, you know, and had some small working prototype. And it was so good, we had to go after it. And so for the next year or plus, we've been optimizing the system. You know, the name Deep Squeak right away was one of those things that I think just captured the imagination. But basically, it takes the audio file, it converts it into a spectrogram, an image that's frequency by time by intensity, and then passes that to the algorithm, the machine learning algorithm. We use basically the same algorithms that are used in self-driving cars. It looks at a scene and says, you know, what might be interesting in this scene that might be something I want to identify. And then it has a second step that tries to say, is this a vocalization or is it not? And that's the same thing it does with a car. It looks at a scene, it says, is this a stop sign or is it not? Is this a, you know, a truck? Is it not? Is this a person? Is it not? Yeah, so manually, I would say, takes maybe 10 times real time, and this takes about 1/10 real time, so something on the order of 100 times faster. But when you can leave a computer on overnight, it's even more than that, because there's no, you know, it can run as long as you want it to. This is the sound a mouse pup makes when they're trying to get the attention of their mother. This is the sound a mouse makes when they're trying to court a female.
My name's Ashley Ahern, and I am the creator and host of a podcast called Grouse, which explores the urban-rural divide and what we can all learn from this weird, troubled bird called the greater sage grouse that lives in sagebrush country across the West and is in decline.
My name is Joel Balsam. I'm a freelance journalist and audio producer, and I'm working on a podcast called Parallel Lives that's about connecting people across the world.
I'm Kevin Coffey, and I'm a postdoctoral scientist at VA Puget Sound and the University of Washington. I study the genetics of stress and anxiety disorders in rodent models, and I'm the co-creator of Deep Squeak, a software for detection and analysis of rodent vocalizations.
So I've got just one more sound for you. It's kind of hard to listen to, I know, but there's actually a good reason for that. Here Be Monsters listener Isaul recorded this last time they were back home in Puerto Rico. This is the call of the short-tailed cricket, which Isaul says sounds like a drilling beep that's going to melt your brain. And recently, several diplomats in Cuba reported being the victims of so-called sonic attacks on their brains. And while some think this may be high-level spycraft, others suspect it's merely the call of the short-tailed cricket. And it seems that the investigations being done into these attacks have backed up this conclusion as well. So next time you're wondering if you're the victim of a sonic attack, just always remember to ask the question, could this be a cricket? Thank you, Isaul, for sending in this sound and for sharing the backstory as well. If you've got any sounds that you'd like to share, you can always email hbmpodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a short message on our voicemail line, which is 765-374-5263. My name is Jeff Entman, and I produce this episode of Here Be Monsters. Ashley Ahern, Joel Balsam, and Kevin Coffey also appeared on this episode. And you can find links to all of them on the episode page at hbmpodcast.com. And also on the website, you'll find a picture of Kane, the dog that you heard in the Chasco sponsorship slot. Again, we're at hbmpodcast.com. Additional sounds in this episode came from various public domain recordings from freesound.org. It's an amazing resource that I use all the time, and so I'm incredibly grateful for it. Music on this episode came from The Black Spot and Cirocell. Here Be Monsters is an independent podcast about fear, beauty, and the unknown. It's supported by individual sponsors and donors. And you can support this show too by visiting patreon.com/hbmpodcast. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon. Do the shrimp. The name shrimp is often given to a great many kinds of smaller crustacean. The common European shrimp, to which the name was originally applied, is up to 3 inches long. It has two pairs of antennae, the outer pair being as long as the body. It is slightly shorter than the common prawn, with which it is frequently confused. By day, the common shrimp buries itself in sand or mud, coming out after dark to walk along the sea bottom or swim close to it. Shrimp eat various small animals, including crustaceans and mollusks, and they also eat seaweed. Well, there you have it, the Illustrated Encyclopedia of Animals. It can make you feel something to hold an object that you've had since you were young.